I'd like to welcome everyone to the Florence Weinberg Show. Frank McKay here. So much more importantly, Florence Weinberg, Dr. Florence Byham Weinberg, is our host each and every week. And she's the author of 15 books. We say this all the time and counting. Her memoirs on the way. And she's the subject of a documentary and, of course, an award-winning podcast and radio show host. Without further ado, Doc, how are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you very much. And you are just back from an incredible trip.
Yeah.
So congratulations on getting home safely, for one thing.
Yeah, and over 100 countries. Now I've been I've been to over 100 countries, and that was a goal of mine, and I'm well over that now. So I get into something called the Traveler's Century Club, whatever that means, and there's only 1,400 people in the world, believe it or not, that that belong to this club. And again, I don't know what the criteria, you know, but you have to be have visited 100 countries and yes, prove it. So I'll apply for it now, and just a nice little thing for what it's worth for the obsessive people out there like me. We got it done.
Yeah, well, I find it just remarkable that that people can even stand to travel that
right
much.
Yeah. That is. What have you been concentrating on? You're talking about alternative power, and you've always done a lot of great research on this, and you've been thinking about it, and it's so important to us as a world community, not only the country, but the world community is in need of power sources.
Well, not only that, we're in need of power sources that don't pollute the planet, and that.
Yes.
That's the main point. If we can find something that will power our civilization without destroying ourselves, that is very interesting to me, and it should be interesting to everybody.
Yeah, no doubt.
So I did two, one on carbon dioxide capture and the different means for doing it, which are very inventive and interesting. And so I did a whole podcast on that, which is available. I think if you go to my website,
yes,
you'll find it. And then another one was on two companies in San Antonio itself that is using carbon capture for its business and making a profit already out of that. So that's one thing that's helping the environment. But in last Sunday's paper, there is a whole section called SA Inc., in other words, San Antonio Incorporated.
Yeah.
And it's all about businesses and so on, corporations and so on in San Antonio. And this article was about hydrogen. And so that's what I'm going to talk about is hydrogen as an alternative power that does not pollute.
Terrific. And it's something I want to know more about. So I think by the end of this broadcast, I'll know something more, much more about it. And I think the listeners will too.
Right. So anyway, here we go. I'm plunging in.
Yes.
My mother was an environmentalist before me. Born in 1906, she was a rarity among people at that time, interested in the fauna and flora around her and any of the varied environments where she was living. Of course, I absorbed her attitude and much of her knowledge as a toddler born in 1933, knowing what bugs and small animals to play with or to observe and what not to touch. Among the insects and arachnids, that is spiders, that I could at least observe were dung beetles, which I didn't want to touch,
right.
Ladybugs, which I did, and something we called a vinegarone, which was about 6 inches long. It was a beetle with pincer-type mandibles and long strands that looked very dangerous coming out of the rear end. and I never touched it, but there were several of them around in my childhood, and I suspect they may be extinct by now. But in any case, they were there, and they were wonders to watch. And of course, that those were opposed to insects that I wasn't supposed to touch, such as black widow spiders, tarantulas, which I did touch and play with, actually. Tarantula can jump about 5 or 6 feet if it's angry.
Wow.
And I would take a long stick and stir it up, and it would jump, jump on and bite the stick. And I took delight in torturing it, but I never tortured it to the point of killing it. So I would let it go on its way eventually. And of course, ants and bees and wasps and that sort of thing. I was quickly aware that I wasn't supposed to interfere with them. And among animals, I mainly played with horned toads, or horny toads, as we used to call them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're actually lizards, not toads, but they're shaped like toads, so they get the name. Anyway, they are also threatened with extinction. And it's my own theory. I haven't heard anybody actually say so. But the invasion of fire ants from the south, from Mexico and further south, up into our country here because of global warming. Horned toads live on ants, and the domestic ants are digestible, but I don't think horned toads can digest fire ants. So I think they get killed from the inside with those fire ants, and therefore they're going to go extinct. And I don't think the scientists have realized that.
Yeah.
I need to go tell them.
But, we'll send them a broadcast.
Right. But anyway, those were favorite playmates of mine. And, of course, they were other small animals I couldn't catch anyway as a toddler, so I never could play with mice or rats or anything like that. So it was somewhere around the 1960s when I became aware of a nationwide environment movement. There was a lot of talk about, I was in Rochester, New York by that time, and acid rain was a major problem in the forests back then, and I think something was done about it because I don't hear anything about it anymore. But in any case, the environment suddenly became first page news. Since then, my family and now I alone continue to recycle everything that can be recycled, only to learn that from the very beginning, plastic was collected under the pretext of recycling, but was simply either burned or dumped into the landfills or the ocean because recycling is too expensive or complicated or polluting in itself. And I'm still isolating and recycling the plastic because it's an instinct by now to do so. But in any case, the family and now I have composted vegetable scraps from the kitchen and garden waste of all kind. To create kitchen gardens after composting it. And now this Antonio picks up vegetable waste of all kinds and adds it to a massive compost heap that's available for use by all citizens. So San Antonio, in many ways, is a forward-looking city. And I have, as I said already, I recorded two previous podcasts on the theme of saving the planet, concentrating on air pollution. The first, and so I'm going to skip this because I've already told you about it. The carbon capture podcast told the listener that carbon dioxide can be transformed into a liquid or a powder or a stone. And the second podcast about the efforts here in San Antonio One of the companies is making baking soda, which is a powder out of air, essentially. It's not high enough quality to be used in baking, actually, but it's useful in several industries, and so it's busy selling and making a profit that way. And the other company is selling innovative plans to use grazing lands to absorb carbon dioxide, transforming the gas into grass. And the grass, of course, is eaten by cattle who remain lean rather than using feedlots that produce fat-laced meat products and millions of tons of methane and carbon dioxide. So it's a way of digesting, in a way, the carbon dioxide through grass. And grass is apparently just as efficient in doing that as trees. And so there you are.
Oh.
So this week I found Inns SA Inc., that's part of Sunday's Express News, the banner headline of an article entitled, "Can Hydrogen Come Clean?" It begins by evoking the history of petroleum in Texas, beginning with the Spindletop oil well in 1901, where it was first discovered. It, of course, launched the boom that ultimately created Texaco, Mobil, and Gulf Oil, and a spate of Texas millionaires whose mansions throughout Texas cities, including San Antonio, and whose glass skyscrapers, to be seen here in San Antonio too, they all stand as historical monuments to that boom back then. With hydrogen, we may, the article hints, be on the threshold of another splurge. As a high school girl from 1946 to 1950, I heard a myth that went around. Some farmer there in the Ozarks, where our family was living at the time, had invented a way to use water as fuel for his trucks and tractors. Water. We all laughed. But we wished it were true, and now it's really possible. Hydrogen promoters believe that the gas is a central part of fighting climate change. If it can be produced through a process that creates few or no greenhouse gas emissions, it could be an eco-friendly fuel for cars, planes, trucks, and ships, and could power energy hungry manufacturing. Hydrogen, when used as a fuel, leaves behind only water. But there is also a price factor. Hydrogen would have to be produced at a cost comparable to gasoline or diesel. And if this were possible, it would transform the fuel industry. But that's a big if. Hydrogen is one of the most common elements in the entire universe. On Earth, it is usually bonded with carbon dioxide and methane. When separated from methane, hydrogen and carbon dioxide become natural gas, abundant in Texas and in wide use already. When further refined, hydrogen is split from carbon dioxide, the latter either used in fracking or somehow stored. This means that large quantities of carbon dioxide are ultimately released into the atmosphere, defeating the goal of reducing greenhouse gases. Of course, developing our ability to capture carbon dioxide could solve the problem, but that's another step in the process. Another less polluting process, and the desirable process, is to use wind or solar power to split hydrogen from water, which is a compound of hydrogen and oxygen, H2O, in other words, where the waste gas is oxygen. And like water, this is benefiting the environment. So far, Texas has been using the first method, that is, isolating hydrogen from air. producing abundant supplies of natural gas and releasing the carbon dioxide back into the air. In other words, it pollutes the system that's being used right now. And there is now a French company called Air Liquide, Liquid Air, which makes hydrogen at plants along the coast of Texas from Beaumont to Corpus Christi. There are more than 100 miles of pipelines that move the hydrogen to companies that buy it for processes like removing sulfur from crude oil. Very few companies use the water method for producing hydrogen, however. But interest is building to transform the present companies from the air method to the water. Texas, and here I'm quoting Brian Fisher, Texas could be the breadbasket not only for the U.S., but for the world in providing hydrogen. And Brian Fisher is a managing director with RMI, and I don't know what RMI is, except that it is a non-profit that supports clean energy. But producing hydrogen cheaply and building the pipelines to move it and a means to store it is a problem, requiring companies to take a financial risk. However, the Biden administration is offering billions of dollars worth of tax credits to kickstart production of hydrogen from gas with carbon capture or water. So carbon capture is the air method, and water is the other. It also plans to divide as much as $7 billion among seven regional clusters of projects to build hydrogen infrastructure, including up to $1.2 billion for projects in Texas and Louisiana that plan to make hydrogen largely from natural gas. Traditional fossil fuel companies like Chevron and ExxonMobil are also interested in hydrogen production. They have the money and expertise to do it, but environmentalists doubt that fossil fuel companies would make hydrogen from natural gas as cleanly as they say they could. Production from natural gas is not clean or low carbon and should not become the main solution to solve the world's worsening climate change crisis, because it entails releasing carbon dioxide into the air. But Kate Ellett, who is president of Hydrogen Energy and Mobility for Air Liquide, says we should not be so puritanical about hydrogen production. She described hydrogen as part of a centuries-long evolution, and I like her idea and think it's correct. A long evolution toward progressively cleaner fuels. Coal replaced wood, then oil replaced coal. And she believes now is hydrogen's spindle-top moment. The technology, economics, and interest are in place to enable the industry to boom. We transition through these different energy cycles, and we've gotten better. We've learned, and we've gotten better, she repeats. This is us evolving into that next generation, and unquote there. Now, Brian Weeks, whom I've mentioned before, Senior Director of Business Development at GTI Energy, now speaks to a standing room only audience, whereas a decade ago, he gave a similar lecture to seven people. As Katie Ellett says, the moment is now. That's largely because the Biden government is funding the effort to produce 10 million metric tons per year of hydrogen made from water using renewable energy or from gas using carbon storage, whereas at present no effort is being made toward carbon capture. Over the past few years, Weeks has helped a coalition of businesses, researchers, and others apply for the federal funding earmarked in the 2021 Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act for regional hydrogen projects called hydrogen hubs. 9 projects centered in Houston applied for federal money as a single hub. And on October 13th, the Department of Energy announced that they and 6 other applicants from across the country won. Chevron, part of the Houston group, wants to make hydrogen and ammonia using fertilizer. ExxonMobil wants to build pipelines and fueling stations for trucks. The Houston hub wants to produce more than 1.8 million metric tons of hydrogen per year, more than any of the other winning hubs, 80% from natural gas. And that would entail carbon capture, not carbon release. Local and state leaders are behind the industry's growth, and Brett Perlman, who is CEO of the nonprofit Center for Houston's Future, supports the hydrogen hub effort. Excuse me. He hopes to make Houston the low-carbon capital of the world.
Wow.
And I'm quoting him, the energy transition is going to happen, and Houston will have a role. The real question is, can we be and continue to be a leader, unquote. At the conference where Brian Weeks spoke, Texas Public Utility Commissioner Lori Cobos, C-O-B-O-S, whose agency regulates the electricity industry, explained that because it has huge natural gas reserves and is a top producer of wind and solar energy, Texas is uniquely positioned to be a national and global leader in hydrogen, quote unquote. Hydrogen could decarbonize industries considered hard to electrify. Hydrogen would power planes and trucks that heavy electric batteries would slow down. It would supply the high heat needed to make cement that electricity could not provide. Federal tax incentives get hydrogen close to being able to compete with fossil fuels on price, said Fisher of RMI. The government plans to pay up to $3 per kilogram of what it defines as clean hydrogen made from water, or up to $85 per metric ton of stored carbon dioxide that's captured after making hydrogen from natural gas. So what do environmentalists have to say? They are especially skeptical of the plan by the big oil companies to make hydrogen by splitting it from carbon dioxide and storing the carbon. They can see that this is a way for fossil fuel companies to continue to produce petroleum, a perpetuation of fossil fuel dependency. Bob Bullard, founding director of the Bullard Center for Environmental and Climate Justice at Texas Southern University, has pioneered environmental justice work for decades when he showed that the city of Houston primarily built its incineration and landfills in black neighborhoods. And he demonstrated the truth of this with one example after another. Now, as a member of the White House Environmental Justice Advisory Council, he sees no proof that a build-out of hydrogen and carbon storage would be any better for local communities than the expansion of the petrochemical industry was over the past century, bringing more pollution than benefits to surrounding communities. He continues to call for a federal study to determine if carbon capture is safe for the people who live around it. And I'm quoting him, can we trust the oil and gas industry to be truthful? We don't have to write a book on that. We know the answer. Unquote. Another authority for the Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis believes that the models for the government has the models have been provided that the government has provided are badly built. The models are badly built. Pipelines might leak. Hydrogen can react with a molecule that breaks down harmful methane in the atmosphere and makes it last longer, contributing to climate change. Also, their method of carbon capture catches only a small percentage. Now, they're bragging about what they do with carbon capture, but they're only capturing a small percentage. Thus, the technology falls far short of total capture. Furthermore, environmentalists don't trust the Texas Railroad Commission, named in the 19th century, which now regulates the state's oil and gas industry, to regulate hydrogen pipelines and underground storage. The agency has a poor track record when it comes to protecting Texas from explosions, leaks, and other problems with wells and pipelines. The spokesperson for the agency denies this, pointing out that it has, and I'm quoting the agent, it has protected public safety and the environment for more than a century, unquote. It does pipeline inspections regularly and has exceeded legislative performance goals, it claims. The agency advocates making hydrogen from natural gas with carbon capture as a ready solution to start lowering how much carbon dioxide escapes into the atmosphere, even if it's not perfect. But Chris Grieg, a senior research scientist with the Andlinger Center for Energy and the Environment at Princeton University, says, I find this polarization seeking perfect as at the expense of very good is problematic. And to be clear, the distrust of oil and gas companies is not unwarranted, right? There's been some wrong done. But somehow we have to set that aside and find some sort of middle ground, unquote. In other words, a little progress is better than no progress. However, I believe that big industry, with the help of the Biden administration, if reelected, will make the first major moves into a world where electricity and hydrogen might be the next dominant power source on the planet. And that is my speech for the day.
Wow. Well, you know, the one thing that, everything sticks out, but one thing that that I'm going to agree with the environmentalist, and I kind of consider myself an environmentalist as well, is that you can't trust the oil companies for anything.
No.
You know, I mean,
they've
it's
demonstrated
ridiculous.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a small sample size. I mean, it's their whole... You know, from John D. Rockefeller. You know, when he was originally gathering whale oil, you couldn't trust anything he said. You know, he was just there to make money, and you know that's what
right.
the nature of the business is. I mean, it's you know, it's not any surprise. It's not it's well over 150 years old now. You know, the petroleum business. Well, really, I mean, and the early 1900s, when Henry Ford started mass producing cars, that's when oil companies started switching from. Actually, originally, I think the oil companies were making money off of gas lighting. You know, like lighting the street lights and home. Lights, and it was, I think, off of whale blubber, you know, it was some kind of whale oil or something.
Yes.
Yeah. Something along those lines. And by the way, they could care less about the environment back then, because they were killing all the whales and just using the oil and letting everything else just, you know, I guess rot there, or maybe they would turn it into some kind of dog food or some kind of, you know, farm food for pigs or whatever. But even then, they cared nothing about the environment. They only
right.
care about the bottom line, which is the, you know, the almighty dollar. And what you're talking about here, you know, could actually be great. But anything that has the oil company's hands on it is just, to me, is just you know, it's almost like, I don't know if you know the if you'll understand this analogy, but it's Lucy and holding the football for Charlie Brown, and she keeps moving it out of the way, and he goes flying, you know, and he does it every single time, and you know that's us with the oil company. Anytime we even think for one moment that somehow that things are going to be different this time, it's just silly.
Yes, exactly. I couldn't agree more. Yes, we have seen it over and over again, and that's the description of madness, that you do something and it fails, but you continue to do it over and over.
Expecting to get a different result somehow.
And, right. In the beginning of the automobile, we were running cars on steam.
Right.
Because the steam engine, the railroad had succeeded so well with steam, burning coal, of course, and polluting the atmosphere. So steam was not as pure as you might think. The water power, but what caused the water to boil? That was the point. So anyway, if companies will actually take up the water method, which leaves not carbon dioxide but water as the waste. That's the waste product, and water is what we need in the world now.
Yeah.
So that would be the thing to do, but I think it's a little more expensive and a little less understood than just splitting natural gas and getting rid of the methane, burning off the methane, flaring it. And releasing carbon dioxide straight into the atmosphere, which is being done all over Texas, in West Texas right now. If I drive over to Albuquerque from San Antonio, that's northwest, and I go through fracking country, and it is absolutely booming. You run into long trains of oil trucks, huge oil trucks, going at about 35 miles an hour on the highway and blocking traffic in both directions. So now I have to go around, the long way around, to avoid that. You can't cut through anymore. So oil is still king, and it's still booming, and especially natural gas, actually. My heating is natural gas, not electricity here in my house. And I think that's true throughout San Antonio, mostly.
Yeah, you know what my biggest problem is that I've become such a cynic over the years. Like, I don't even know what to believe anymore. I don't know who's corrupted by big oil. You know, and it's the same thing with the pharmaceutical, and I don't want to sound like a conspiracy theorist or whatever, but, you know, follow the money. It's like big pharma, you know, like I don't know what works anymore. I don't trust the medical community. I don't trust, you know, I trust my own doctor, you know, and I guess because I know him and I know, you know, there's doctors that I trust. But as far as the big picture, big pharma and big medicine, I don't know what they're if what they're telling us is true. And it goes double for, again, the fuel companies. And the thing is that you could get somebody who pretends to be, or who actually legitimately was, an environmentalist, and then somebody gets a hold of them, and all of a sudden you look, and their son's making $1 million a year from some company connected to the oil company, and then you wonder whether you could trust anything that the father is saying, or you know what. And I'm just giving that as just a random example, but we have no idea what to trust and what to believe. I've been told over the years that they have cars out there, or they have the ability, and I've been hearing this for 20, 30 years, that they have the ability to have cars that run for 100 miles a gallon on a you know, on regular gasoline, on regular gasoline, that they have cars, but that the oil companies and the car companies are in cahoots, and they would never allow it to happen.
Right.
And I'm telling you, I tend to believe that than anything that they say. I mean, is you know, it's the same thing with TV sets, for example. You know, like when they first came out, the TV set that was a flat screen and it was 36 inches. It was like, wow, what are they gonna, you know, what are they gonna build next? Meanwhile, a couple years later, that becomes obsolete because you have a 45 inch TV that they protected, that they perfected, and it goes on and on and on. Like, I believe probably that they had the technology back then to have a 100 foot,
a whole wall, in fact. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, movie screens and movie theaters have been operating for, you know, again, 100 and, you know, around the same time that the car industry started started going.
Yes,
Thomas Edison,
right.
You know, had a monopoly here in, you know, on the East Coast. It's why people drove out to California and started to get away from Thomas Edison, basically, is what they did. But anyway, the point is that that. We probably have much better technology than we know about, and it's getting bought up, it's getting purchased, it's getting corrupted, or maybe I mean, dare I say that something mysterious is happening to some of these inventors, and it might be just a coincidence, but I know people that are heavily into the renewable energy field, and they told me about it, you know, a lot of different people that came up with inventions, and you know, they meet some bizarre demise, and all kinds of things happen like that you could point to, and it looks at least a little suspicious. Anyway, I don't know, where do you come down on that? What's your basic feeling? Do you think that we're being given everything that
is, we aren't.
Yeah, we're not. There's no way, right?
I'm with you 100% on that.
Yeah. Okay. I don't want to sound like a conspiracy nut.
No, but because intelligent people like you, and I will put myself in your company there,
thank you,
are skeptical of what they tell us, because we know that the bottom line is the only thing of value for them. That we are skeptical of what is supposed to be the truth being told us, that opens the gate to conspiracy theories. So I can see how Americans who are not as well educated as you and I are, and as urbane as you and I are, how they can easily be deceived and will swallow these conspiracy theories that are published on social media. So I think that is the danger, that if we could only trust what we are being told as the truth, without skepticism and doubting, then we could make much more progress in this country, rather than having to question everything. And that is what we're doing, and I think we have to continue to question everything and look into everything. The present government is spending heavily, billions of dollars, on precisely the topic of hydrogen isolation, and it wants it done cleanly. In other words, either splitting it off natural gas, so natural gas is hydrogen, carbon dioxide, and methane, and getting rid of the methane in one way or another. I don't think it should be flared or simply released, and I think it's not being flared, I know it's being flared. I can see it as I drive through fracking country.
Yeah.
But But anyway, getting rid of the methane and isolating and storing the carbon dioxide because it can be used for other purposes. So if that can be done with natural gas, then we have the technology and the wherewithal in industry at present to do that. We just have to build storage facilities for carbon dioxide that are leak-proof. And there is a cavern, I don't know how big it is, but it's a huge salt-lined cavern, underground, obviously, that is full of carbon dioxide right now. And I don't know where that's located, but I think it's probably a natural cavern, but they've got it sealed in there. So that sort of thing could continue because there are lots of those caverns in this country. So if we could store the carbon dioxide and use it, turn it into some fuel, it can also be turned into fuel, by the way. I think it's the Zurich airport is run on it, on the carbon dioxide fuel. And the planes that take off from there that belong to Switzerland are being run on that same fuel. So it's not just experimental, it's actually being used already. So that's carbon dioxide. So if we store the carbon dioxide, turn it into fuel, isolate the hydrogen, turn it into fuel to power the enormous demands of modern civilization, then we can do it without destroying the planet. But it's going to cost money. And that's what the Biden government is doing right now. It's funding it. It has passed an act in 2021, and it's using that money already. So maybe there is hope, and maybe there is truth.
Yeah. Yeah.
I pray that this is true.
Well, it's certainly more believable than anything we've had before, you know, I mean, or a lot of what we've had before. So I don't know. This is great work on your part and your sources part. I mean, we get to the bottom line, or you get to the bottom line on our end very, very well. And I trust your research because you do question, and the fact that you're questioning, and you're a cynic yourself when it comes to this. And I think that makes you know, the critical thinker in you is going to get us closer to the truth, even if it's not perfect, even if it's not perfect truth, even if it's not exact truth. It's
right.
It's going to get us closer if we question all of this and you know, you do the research the way you've been doing it. Great job, Doc. Very, very good stuff here.
Thank you. Yes. Yeah, I thought it was worth publishing this to a wider audience. So,
no doubt.
So there it is.
All right, Doc. Well, great job. And you know, keep up the great work. Always very knowledgeable. I feel much more knowledgeable after a session like this, a podcasting and radio session. You know, when you walk away knowing a lot more about a subject, it's a good thing. And let's face it, this is important. Kudos to your mother for being that way
yes.
ahead of her time. I mean, that's just amazing. What an amazing woman she was. I mean, people weren't talking anything about the environment back then. You know, do you know what percentage of people your mother fell into the category of when they were concerned with the environment back then? People were thoughtful.
1% maybe. Yeah.
Not even 1%. I mean, less than 1%, I'm sure. But
right.
Just great job for posthumously. We tip our hat to Mrs. Bynum, and what a great, what's her first name, by the way? I forgot your mom's first name.
Gladys,
right. Gladys Bynum.
Yep.
Just God bless your parents and your mother on this. Great job. Doc, wonderful
Thank
job.
Thank you, and welcome back from your Caribbean tour.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel better. I feel a little more accomplished on the traveling end here. But to everyone out there, thank you very much for tuning in each and every week. And we know you have a lot of options. And thank you very much for tuning in here. Frank McKay signing off for Dr. Florence Byham Weinberg. And we'll see you next time on The Florence Weinberg Show.